long before the January 6th attack on the nation's capital. Protesters stormed the Wisconsin state capitol.
Senators, please return to the chambers so we can begin.
As Republican Governor Scott Walker stripped most public workers of their power to collectively bargain.
Many of the state and local unions that were institutional players in 2010 no longer are.
12 years later,
what we did was completely legal and constitutional.
The unions see a new opportunity to strike back. Fox 6 Studios, this is Open Record. I'm your host, Brian Polson, and I'm joined today by Open Record's executive producer, Sarah Smith. Hey, Sarah.
Hi.
We are also joined by two of our colleagues today. First, Fox 6 political reporter Jason Calvey. Hey, Jason.
Hey.
And joining us over Zoom is Fox 6's Waukesha beat reporter, Brett Lemoyne. Hey, Brett.
Hi there.
We are recording this episode on Wednesday, December 6th, for release on Thursday, December 7th. And about a week ago, a group of seven public employee unions filed a lawsuit in Dane County Circuit Court seeking to overturn a now 12-year-old state law that fundamentally overhauled the role of public unions, public employee unions, rather, in Wisconsin. We're going to talk about that lawsuit today, and we're also going to go back in time to the winter of 2011 and what may have been the most chaotic and divisive period in the history of Wisconsin politics. And I know that sounds like hyperbole to say things like in the history of, but it was a really chaotic time. And Brett, I'm going to start with you because I know you covered some of this, but not for Fox 6 News in Milwaukee. You actually were in the Wisconsin Capitol during these protests back in 2011 for another television station. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I started working at WFRV, the CBS station in Green Bay, in October of 2010. So just imagine that time period too, right? Because that was right before the election in November when everything changed, when the whole state changed. It was that red wave that came through. And actually, the first time I was live on Channel 5 WFRV in Green Bay was that election night. I was with the Ron Johnson campaign in Oshkosh watching these results come in, and everything at that moment was just red all over Wisconsin. What I remember most about this, Brian, is that there were kind of two parallel stories going on at this time. And again, keep in mind, I was working in Green Bay. We had the elections, the election cycle then, and then also the Packers' road to the Super Bowl. They were both going on at the same time. And what I remember most is I was sent to Dallas that winter to go cover the Super Bowl. We drove there. It was a long drive. We were there for a week. And then as soon as I got back after that, it was just 1 week after that is when all this chaos started in Madison. I was driving from Appleton to Madison, back and forth every day for 3 weeks covering this. It was really one of the most exhausting periods that I can remember of my career. But what I think of when I think back on those times is just, it was claustrophobic. There were so many people that were packed into that Capitol. It was so loud. People were playing music, banging on drums inside the Capitol.
It echoes really loudly there. Yeah.
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 Well, and I watched a couple stories before we came in here just to remind myself, because that was a long time ago, 2011, that was a lot has happened in life and work life since then. But the videos were just, and to Brett's point, everyone's in there just jam packed and signs and things that they're holding. And I mean, it was busy outside too. Just so many people that were passionate about this whole situation.
And Brett, you were there where obviously the crush of protesters both inside the Capitol building and outside on the Capitol Square and in the lawn outside the Capitol building. It's interesting because we work for Fox 6 News, WITI. We are owned by Fox Television now. At the time, we were not. We were owned by a smaller company called Local TV LLC. I believe that's who we were at the time. But nonetheless, you've got the letters FOX on a mic flag. You go to Madison at a time when there's a lot of venom and animosity toward Republican Governor Scott Walker and then Fox News and the cable channel, just having those letters, there was a real experience of the way people reacted. Can you talk a little bit about just the atmosphere of being there and the way people were reacting to the media and how we were covering this?
Well, again, I mean, I wasn't part of the Fox family at that time. I was working for a CBS station, but I can tell you that, I mean, it was clear to me at that time, and I think it was clear to everyone else that was there protesting, right, the hundreds and maybe thousands of people that were inside and outside the Capitol, that this was a time of great change, whether you liked it or not, right, that this was a time when really Wisconsin was splitting in a way that I don't remember before, and I really don't think we've quite experienced since. I'll let Jason speak to that. But I think that it was really an awakening of a moment in time when it was left and right, and there were clashes in between, and it just doesn't seem like we've really, in a lot of ways, recovered from that moment.
I just want to interject one thing before we move on, because you talked about I forgot about how closely coincided the Super Bowl was.
Yeah.
And there was also a blizzard in there. I mean, we were dealing with a blizzard just before all of this happened. And then I mentioned, I put a timeline together of the events here, and we won't go through all of the timeline. But as I was going through it, there were a couple of things that I thought, I remember some of this really well, and there's some stuff that was a little foggy. And one of the things, I'm sometimes probably too open on this podcast, but the reality is I was wondering why some of this seemed so foggy. And then I realized that the 61 hours of debate the assembly had, 61 consecutive hours of debate on this legislation, happened literally over the course of the day when I went to court to make my divorce final. I am married a second time. This was a very chaotic time in public life. It was a very chaotic time in my own life. Yeah, the Packers and the Super Bowl, there was a blizzard. It was kind of nuts, wasn't it?
Right. And when I said that to you yesterday, too, I'm like, I have to kind of get reacquainted with some of this stuff, because he was like, well, what were you doing at that time? I got married that winter, like that fall into the winter there. And there was that. I was training for a marathon. So like all these other things were happening. And this was kind of like, but now you start to get like that trickle effect of like, oh, I remember, like, we'll get to the Scott Walker recall efforts and all the people that were on every street corner with clipboards, and you could sign it outside of a CVS. And so, yeah, to that point, just all the things that you're like, oh, that happened too. And so, Jason, you weren't here in Wisconsin at the time, but a lot of what was happening was making national headlines.
Right.
Lawmakers fleeing the state, leaving wherever.
Where did they go? Where are they, Rockford?
Like, it was like, where in the world is Carmen Sandiego? You know, like, where did Gwen Moore go? Nobody knows. So, you know, do you remember that time?
Yeah. And the thing about it was, you know, the images of the, as Brett was describing, and the massive amounts of people packing into the Capitol. I mean, the entire Capitol, you could barely move if you had to go to the bathroom. Brett, I'm sure it was like, how do I even navigate to the bathroom? Because there's so many people. They were very passionate. They were fired up. They were chanting, as we heard in that intro, kill the bill was sort of the model. They had motto that they had on their signs and also their chants, you know, hey, hey, ho, ho, Scott Walker's got to go. You know, all those chants that the protesters continued for days and weeks, packing into that Capitol. Those images also corresponded with what was happening on the international stage at the very time. So it's all kind of blending together. Remember, we had the Arab Spring. So we had in Cairo and other Arab areas where you had these massive protests as well, where people were kind of fired up and challenging the status quo of government. We saw that happening in Wisconsin. If you watched national news at the time, it was, you know, lead stories. It was on the front page of the national newspaper. So it was not just a Wisconsin issue. It was really something that the entire country was watching. I think Scott Walker was hoping that would have, not at the time, but later was hoping it was going to propel him all this attention and what he did. Because remember, you know, conservatives were really happy with what he did. It was almost like the best of times, the worst of times, depending on your political persuasion. You know, for some people, this was amazing. Act 10 was an amazing piece of legislation. It was going to we'll talk about kind of the nitty-gritty of what's in there, but remember, for conservatives, it was a great thing. What a hero Scott Walker was. And then for liberals, it was the worst piece of legislation ever. This was going to destroy our public schools and other things moving forward. So it was so divisive. Everybody was paying attention to it. And again, where are the Democratic senators? Where did they flee to? To stop the vote, right? There wasn't a quorum.
One of the craziest things is obviously it was a strategic play for them to get out of the state so that the Republicans didn't have a quorum in the Senate to complete this legislation. So it was a tactical move, but it was one of those where you thought, I've never seen this before. I've never covered anything like this. We don't know where the senators are. And then there was, you know, some contact established with some of them. They would talk to the media as long as there was agreement. We're not going to tell you where we are. We're not going to give away this information. It really was a bizarre time. But Brett, you brought up that it seemed like this sort of sea change, the change of everything. And I look back at that time. I remember when this was first announced on a Friday, and it was on Monday that the protests sort of all started in Madison, and teachers across the state were calling in sick. Schools were being canceled because there weren't enough staff members to handle the students. And it seems like, and I just wonder from your perspective, having been here, you came here later on, you've been here ever since then, a lot's happened in the world, but does it seem like that was the beginning of the sort of divisive animosity that has been a part of our daily lives ever since?
Well, yeah, like I said before, I mean, I don't remember anything quite like this that happened before Act 10. And I think we're still feeling the ramifications of it even today. You're right. I mean, it really felt like, you know, it was two sides here and there was a line clearly drawn. And obviously, you know, the elections in, you know, the election cycle of 2015, 2016 kind of felt a little similar to that in a way. And we already mentioned January 6th, you know, that obviously the visuals of that, you know, were pretty striking in terms of a parallel here. But I have to say, I mean, I never felt unsafe when I was at in the Capitol in Madison covering this. It never felt like it was, you know, it rose to that level. But yeah, I mean, it was contentious to say the least.
I think about the when you talk about January 6th, when a lot of people were watching that and saying, I've never seen anything like that. And I grant you, these are not the same events, and there are great differences in what occurred. But there was a piece of me that felt like the whole rest of the country was seeing something for the first time that is like, we've kind of been through something like that. At least the occupation of the Capitol, the people sleeping there overnight who wouldn't leave. Yeah. Like you said, the claustrophobia of all those people. I sometimes think that the divisiveness we saw in Wisconsin in 2011 and the next couple of years was almost in some ways a precursor of what the nation was going to see, especially once you had the election of Donald Trump in 2016 and all of the sort of divisive animosities from both sides since then. Was Wisconsin in some ways ahead of the game in terms of the current kind of environment and politics that we have now? I don't know. What do you think of that, Jason?
I think that's really fair to say, right? I mean, I think Wisconsin, what the description of that divisiveness that Brett just laid out is exactly what the country saw in 2016's election and then in 2020 as well. It just hasn't stopped, right? This, you know, you're either for us or against us, right? It's one or the other. There's no middle ground. That was sort of the situation in Wisconsin in the fight over Act 10. And that's what we've seen at the national level. Now, big caveats, as you mentioned, between these protests in Madison and the protests at the U.S. Capitol, right? I mean, we saw those images of the U.S. Capitol attacks where people were using flags to beat police officers. People died. Mm-hmm. That didn't happen, right? That did not happen in Wisconsin. No police officers died. Nobody that I know of never saw video of anybody using a flag to attack a police officer at the Capitol in Wisconsin, right?
There was no violence like that. I mean, there were certainly there were clashes between police and protesters. There were protesters literally using bike locks to chain themselves to the railings inside inside the gallery, and there was, you know, there were instances where there were sort of professional agitators who were, or you know, repeat civil disobedience agitators who were getting arrested over and over again. One famously poured a beer on the head of Robin Voss, and that got a lot of attention. But there was nothing on the level of true violence at that time. It was certainly there was a lot of animosity. There was a lot of venom, but it never reached that level, thankfully, here in Wisconsin. We've talked a lot about the sort of reaction to it, which was tremendous. The question is, what was everyone reacting to?
Right,
so for those who are listening to this who go, I don't even know what Act 10 is, would you please explain this to me? Jason, can you give us an idea essentially what Act 10 is and why it was so controversial?
The Budget Repair Act, Budget Repair Bill, which is what Republicans call it. They were repairing the budget. They were, Scott Walker was talking about deficits and, you know, potentially major budget cuts moving forward. So they, you know, had to, in his eyes, had to do something and to make changes to deal with a potential major budget cuts.
He said to fend off huge layoffs,
right,
of state employees.
Right. And, you know, they laid that out in you know, the framing of the bill and all of that, Act 10. And so what it does, it, multiple points, right? It's a huge piece of legislation. But one of the things it does is it limits collective bargaining for public service employees. So we're talking about state government workers, city workers. We're talking about teachers unions, police unions. We're not talking about police unions because they get exemptions. We'll get to that in a second. But we're talking about public service employees and their unions, and it places major restrictions on them. Moving forward under Act 10, they can only, those public service employee unions can only negotiate base wages up to the point of inflation. So, you know, if inflation's 2% over the course of a year, then you can negotiate a union contract for teachers, for example, up to the point of inflation. Now, this year, when we saw 8% inflation, we saw Milwaukee Public Schools move forward and give that 8% salary raise for teachers in Milwaukee. We saw that in Madison as well, and some other municipalities where they actually, where other school districts went up to that 8%, because this is historic. You know, we've seen huge inflation right now. But in the past year since Act 10, inflation has not been 8%, so they've been going up to the point
but
of inflation.
Other things, benefits, things like that, sick days, right, working conditions, that's all off limits, right?
Right. And one of the things that Act 10 required was it did place limits on, or required employees to pay in more for benefits, for health coverage, as well as for pensions. And so at the end of the day, teachers and other public service employees were seeing less take-home pay because more of their pay was coming out for the pension and for healthcare. So that was a big part of this as well. And then a third part of Act 10 was that it no longer had this mandate or this automatic deduction of your union dues. And so that was a big issue for the unions, where they saw a big decrease in the money coming into the unions because the money was no longer automatically deducted.
It, on the other side, it was a big issue for some workers who said, I don't want to pay union dues, but I have no choice. If I get this job, I'm required to. So that was sort of the argument from the opposite sides. One other piece, Jason, that I recall from this that has had a huge impact on unions in Wisconsin was it required them to annually recertify. Mm-hmm. Every year they've got to take a vote, and it has to be a 51% vote of all eligible voters, which is key because it doesn't mean of everyone who votes. You can sit out the vote and you still count as one of the eligible voters. So 51% of the union membership has to vote every year to recertify. And a lot of unions have gone by the wayside because of that. They've been decertified because they couldn't keep up with that. Is that right?
That's right. I'm trying to get the
looking for the numbers. Yeah,
this is the bill text right here. And you're exactly right on that. In the past, before Act 10, the unions, just a majority of the employees in that unit. So let's say we're talking about teachers at MPS. The majority of the employees in the unit who are actually voting their votes for the labor organization. So voting members, majority of the people voting had to approve the union. But moving forward under Act 10, it was 51% of the actual employees, not just those who are voting. So it's a lot larger threshold to cross. And it was every single year, which, you know, this was an issue during the pandemic where, you know, I talked to some union people during the pandemic in 2020, and they're like, how are we going to recertify during the pandemic when we're working remotely? We have to have these votes every single year. How are we going to be able to do this? So that was an issue that came, you know, as Brett mentioned, I mean, Act 10 has never gone away. It's still been here. And when we're thinking about all of these things that we talked about, this was the chance now with this new lawsuit for another attempt to try to challenge Act 10. There have been a number. I mean, this thing has been through state court and federal court all the way up to the Wisconsin Supreme Court that ruled that it was constitutional. But now we've got another attempt at a different legal issue that they're bringing up in this latest lawsuit filed by the seven unions here in Wisconsin.
But it didn't. So this, the lawsuit, though, didn't go to the state Supreme Court, right?
Right. It's filed in Dane
this
County.
This new lawsuit.
Yeah, the new lawsuit.
This brand new lawsuit. Yeah, brand new, this brand new lawsuit goes to the Dane County Circuit Court. And so that could take, you know, a year or so. They're going to work through all, you know, that's how, you know, normal cases don't just get settled right away. So it could potentially be a year or so, who knows how long the court will take, the lower court, to rule on this particular lawsuit. And then no matter how they decide, you could imagine one side or the other is going to want to appeal this, right?
I think, as you said, this has been through the courts so many times, and it has been upheld on appeal or upheld by the Supreme Court in the past. What's different now? Why are the seven unions that filed this taking now as the opportunity to try again?
They're saying they have a new legal argument at the state level, and that's equal protection of the Wisconsin state constitution. They're saying because there are two equal protection.
Who's they? So, like, oh. Just so that people, like, yeah. I know, and we keep saying they. So the new lawsuit, though, was filed by
seven different unions. So I can name some of them. You know, you've got the SEIU. You've got the Teamster, International Brotherhood of Teamsters, Teachers Union, Madison. That's the Teachers Assistants Association of the University of Madison. Mm-hmm. So various unions, including.
Well, you got the Abbotsford right. Education yeah. Association, yeah. right? Yeah. So there's some teachers unions in some mm-hmm. certain yeah. districts. I think Beaver Dam is one of yep. them as well. Mm-hmm. But it's teachers unions, it's Teamsters, it's others. These are public employee unions. Mm-hmm. But my question about why now is what's different? I know they're trying a different legal argument. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the equal protection, and you raised it earlier.
Yeah.
Act 10 applies to public employee unions, but not first responders.
Well, there's
exceptions.
There's exceptions there. I mean, so I think what I would say is that part about the bargaining, so placing the major restrictions on collective bargaining for the unions, was when talking about only being able to negotiate up to inflation, that only applies to these public, the non-public safety unions that we're talking about.
Right. And so in this lawsuit, they're trying to say that distinction between police and firefighters versus all these other public employee unions violates the Equal Protection Clause.
Yeah.
That's their legal approach. My right. question is why now? Because this has been litigated before. The Supreme Court has said this is constitutional. It was a 4-3 decision mm-hmm. at the time, mm-hmm. Obviously a controversial decision, but they've ruled on this. Why now? What has changed in the landscape of the courts? And we've talked about it on here before. I know I'm setting you up. I'm putting the ball on the tee.
What's different? He's giving me a slow ball over home plate there. April had this major Supreme Court election. The balance of power of the Wisconsin Supreme Court after 15 years flipped from conservative control. Now it's controlled by liberals. And so, you know, liberal groups, progressive groups, mm-hmm. these labor unions see this as an opening try. They were unable to win over the last 12 years that this thing has been law. Act 10 has been law for 12 years. Haven't been able to win at the federal level or the state level. So now with that Supreme Court now going to the liberal side, they see a potential opening. But they're not going right to the Supreme Court. They are, as we mentioned, going to the circuit court. So it's going to work its way through the lower courts before it gets to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. But they see the opening. They say, hey, this particular issue of the distinction between regular general employees and public safety employee unions, this issue hasn't been treated yet as far as the equal protection of the state constitution. Now, it's been discussed at the federal levels under the federal constitution's equal protection. But right now, they want to go and say, hey, Wisconsin courts, we think that this law violates the equal protection.
You've got a couple of potential conflicts here, too, that have been raised already early on. If this does get to the state Supreme Court, one, you have Justice Brian Hagedorn, who was actually the chief legal counsel for Scott Walker when Act 10 was drafted. He actually wrote some of the language that's in Act 10. He has previously not indicated whether or not he would recuse himself if this came back before the court. And you have Justice Janet Protasiewicz, just recently elected, who says she marched against Act 10.
Yeah.
She has made statements that she sided with the dissent in the earlier Supreme Court ruling. So would she recuse herself? Obviously, if they're banking, the unions that are filing this are banking on the balance of power in the court having shifted, her recusing herself would obviously be a big hit for them. What does that say about where this might go? And is this one of those we'll find out when it gets there? Or will this be a discussion leading up to that?
So, yeah, you're right. Janet Protasiewicz, you know, protested Act 10. She signed the recall of Scott Walker. So she was asked about this during the campaign. The newspaper questioned her, Journal Sentinel questioned her about this during an interview, and she said she would consider the possibility of recusal. But that's where we are. So do both of those justices, because they were involved, they took positions for and against Act 10, does that mean Hagedorn and Protasiewicz have to recuse? That's up to them to decide, and we'll see what they actually decide. Again, the case isn't there yet. We're right in the middle of the lower courts just getting the case. The paperwork has been filed with them. And so we'll see where it goes from there.
The legal process is not fast. I mean, we could have another Packers Super Bowl before then, right?
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. We hope. But that's yeah, just right. Wishful thinking. Brett, you did not work here in 2011. You have obviously been here for a long time since. I think you said you told me you came in 2013 to Fox 6 News. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah,
okay,
10 years.
So 10 years here at Fox 6 News. And while you weren't working for us when you covered the protests, you have covered the protests in Madison over Act 10. And since then, and unfortunately, wasn't the last wild protests that you've covered, because on a totally different topic, we had the George Floyd protests and the things that broke out in 2020. But over your career here, what have you seen in terms of, I mean, you're a Waukesha beat reporter. You are in one of the WOW counties that has been a Republican stronghold. And I know that based on what we've talked about on this podcast, some of the election numbers have shifted over time. What are you seeing in terms of the way things have changed since 2011 and since you arrived here in 2013?
I think it's gotten far more polarized, right? I mean, it's the left is very far left. The right is very far right. And we see that certainly in Waukesha County, you know, with the rise of Donald Trump and everything that's happened since his election. But I do think that there have been some shifting demographics, some shifting poll numbers here in the WOW counties, in Waukesha in particular, where it's still obviously a very strong Republican ground. But there have been some changes, and I think that there have been some reactions to that, especially after the last presidential election, that people are starting to think, oh, well, gosh, you know, we are maybe not as strong as we thought we once were. And you know, when these polarizing figures are at the top of the ballot, the trickle down aspect of it is felt at every level, too.
When I think about to the and like Brett was saying, there are very, I think, far fewer people who are kind of in that middle gray area. They're either one side or the other. And then I think, too, about how back in 2011, social media wasn't nearly as big as it was.
Well, yeah.
I knew some of my teacher friends were in Madison by just the pictures they posted on Facebook, because Facebook was it. And so that's the only way I could tell. But like, imagine if it was like Instagram was as big as it is now, or TikTok, or I mean, anything. It would have just, I think it would have amplified it. And maybe to your point of like, maybe people only in Wisconsin knew about what was going on in Wisconsin. It would have been a much bigger
level. Well, at that point, Sarah, you know, one thing to keep in mind too, you're right, social media wasn't as big of a thing. But what was really interesting about this time period is when the recall election came up, you'll remember, you could search online for if your neighbor voted or signed the petition to recall Scott Walker, if your teacher, if your grandparent or whoever. Mm-hmm. So there was kind of that aspect of, you know, it wasn't as private as a decision for people to make back then, too.
Yeah, it beat that recall, because you had the groups that then collected the public recall stuff, and they turned it into a database that was searchable. It became somewhat of the sort of scarlet letter of the day of the, you know, where you were either a recaller or you weren't. Yeah. And if you were, there were a lot of people who, when they would run for maybe a local school board election or some other nonpartisan seat, they would immediately be doxxed as you signed the recall, and therefore you either should or shouldn't be elected. But to your point, the change in social media, I mean, that was a huge deal back then, and it got a lot of attention on national news. I remember Rush Limbaugh at the time was daily talking about what was going on in Madison. So conservative talk radio was all over it. CNN was covering it. It was a big deal everywhere, but you didn't have individuals with the same power to produce their own videos and to circulate them the way we have today. You think of the way that occurred during the protests over George Floyd, the stuff that happened in Kenosha, in Wauwatosa. There were citizen journalists, essentially, who were really reporting on the ground and putting some of that video out there. So obviously, we have more access to the citizenry and what they're thinking about and feeling in those situations today. I don't think any of us probably wants to go through any of those sort of situations again, but you always kind of wonder, what's the next Act 10? What's the next George Floyd protest? What's the next big flashpoint? You know, I guess none of us really know sitting here right now, do we?
No, we don't. But you know, as you lay that out, you can tell the frequency of these types of events have increased since then, too. And I think that's telling.
Yeah. Well, with regard to the challenge to Act 10, Act 10 is still the law today, but there is another effort to try to change that. And we'll just have to see where that goes. I'm sure it won't be the last we talk about it.
Yeah. And you know, you talked about the state being, you know, clear-cut division after and because of, you know, and resulting from Act 10. But at the same time, our state in 2022 picked a Republican senator and a Democratic governor. Yeah. So there's still people in the middle.
Right.
In this divided state that are voting for both parties. You know, you can dissect that. We've probably dissected that on this podcast before as far as what happened there. But there's still people in the middle that are voting for both parties here in this swing state, which, again, when you look at 2024, it's again going to be one of the few states in the entire country that they're considering a swing state that could flip Democrat or Republican. So we'll continue to see people fighting over all these issues. And
there's a good reason the DNC was here or was supposed to be here if it hadn't been for the pandemic, and a good reason the RNC is coming here next summer. And that's a good time for us to go off the record. This is the part of the podcast where we get a little more casual and have a little fun by talking, or answering a question, rather, for which we have not prepared. And Sarah always has that question for us. What do you have in mind today, Sarah?
Well, gentlemen, it's good to be here. Okay, so 'tis the season. We're talking about stockings. Not the kind you put on your feet, but the kind you hang on your fireplace or wherever you have in your home. Are they decor or are they functional? So think about it. So you hang stockings, right? Oh, I just bought 4 new ones this year because it is.
Are you saying, do you actually fill them with things?
Well, okay.
Functional.
So when they're on there, you put the stuff on there. You need something as soon as
they're
Santa
full,
or Saint Nick or whomever is shoving stuff in there, they get heavy.
Right.
You can't leave them on the hook.
No,
right?
That's when they're
gonna,
lay them
the whole
down.
Thing's gonna come down.
No, that's when you just get a beefier hook.
I don't know. Okay. Okay.
You can use like 10-pound weights or something at the top. Right.
But I'm just like, I mean, children that, you know, between Brett and Calvi and myself, very much are stuffing stockings, having stuffed stockings in our home.
I stuff stockings too, but I don't have a child.
Well, that's fine. So then do they stay up on the mantle?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. Last year there was a blow dryer in there.
Wait.
Well, do you have
a second. There's more questions about the product, but like, how did it stay up? And how big is your stocking?
Do you have a permanent hook that is screwed into the mantle
It's a pretty heavy weight that sits on top of the mantle.
Can you send me that link or what?
Like, you know, you can get those big, huge hooks that you use in your garage to hang bikes from. So you could probably like get that screwed into the mantle and you can put probably a bike in the stocking. That'd probably be the best.
Well, I feel like the St. Nick tradition, which, by the way,
is today.
It was not. I know.
Happy St. Nick Day for all who celebrate.
That was not something that occurred in our household when I was younger. So it was something I adapted to later. But when I realized that a part of that tradition was like the cutie oranges.
Oh, yeah.
And those have some weight to them. And that's when I realized.
When you add more than one. Yeah.
Yeah. You've got to have something. So instead of just leaving them hanging, the stocking is removed and
placed down.
You know,
St. Nick
puts it on the ground.
Okay, Brett, what about your house?
Oh, we have the stockings on the mantle, yes. And then Santa Claus comes, and that night Santa fills the stockings and places them under the tree.
Oh, under the tree is a good idea.
Yeah.
Because
it's Santa's idea.
Santa puts them down like below the mantle, which is like good and fine because they're with all the other Santa goodies. But
Santa knows how we each prefer it.
Yeah. So like I should probably leave him a memo like, please put stockings under tree. That's a good idea. OK. But again, to my point, they get too heavy. There's too much in there, which maybe that's a problem. Too.
Chunk of lead.
Jason, what do you
so, I mean, perfect answer from political reporters and also Waukesha County reporter. Both in the, we're both in the middle
we're
right
both
here.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's a decor, but I don't have a mantle. Unfortunately, we do not okay. have a fireplace.
Okay.
Like that's a big disappointment for our house. No fireplace to hang them. But if we did, and when we did in the past have a fireplace, you know, you would hang them before Christmas
do
and
the
then,
kids have
and,
stockings
then, and then,
now?
And then they would be put down on the ground when they're yes. stuffed with all the stuff that yeah. they get do... on Christmas Eve.
So where do you put your stockings now? Like, where are they located? Or do they not come out until Christmas Eve?
That's a good question.
You don't know, Grace.
Can I say that I don't know that?
Mrs. Galvey. Yeah.
Where is Mrs. Galvey? Let's get her on the line.
But I can tell you the kids were really excited this morning when they woke up. Today yes. is December 6th, St. Yeah, Nicholas yeah. Day.
St. Nicholas
and they
Day.
Were really excited because they had stuff in their, they had cookies in their shoes. And my wife, I surprised her. I put some chocolate in her boots.
Aww.
And she's like, where do these come from? Her sister was over last night. Did my sister drop this off?
Oh.
I didn't tell her. Like she had to text secret. my sister-in-law.
So for your wife, you were Saint Nick, and she has no idea.
Well, now she does.
Well, now she does.
Because my sister-in-law told her that she didn't drop
it. Yeah.
The thing that gets me is because we want to stuff things inside these. We have these stockings that are all so like the idea was they were actually things way
yes.
back when that you actually wore.
Yes,
that you
like you would put your own.
I can't wear a stocking that's that fat.
No, and I bought beautiful ones this year that I have been eyeing up for years. That they all have our letters of our first names on them. It's like so nice, and they all match. And all that.
Oh, ours! I have three different colors: one for the dog, one for me, two for the kids that match. But yeah, it's a hodgepodge.
It's bringing me joy, but either way, those hooks. I need Kale's hooks apparently to put in a blow dryer. What is happening?
A blow dryer?
That's
the first time I've heard of a blow dryer in a stocking. I mean, candy.
It was one of
maybe
those
a flashlight.
Like tubular ones. I don't know what they're called. It's a blow dryer and a brush and a
was this from
like
stick?
Shark
Fast
or
Times
Dyson?
At Ridgemont High?
No,
totally not, tubular.
I don't know. It's a blow dryer that's in a tube that you can do a thing with. Wow.
2023, y'all.
I think you could get like an external hard drive that would fit like a thumb drive. That would
yes.
be a good one. I don't know.
You might miss it. You might throw it in the
well,
stocking.
That's one of the things
might get missed.
I'm always looking for, like, you know, when I'm out shopping, what are, you know, people talk about stocking stuffers. If you can find small things that are more than just candy that you can put in a stocking.
It's difficult.
But do you ever have a good gift idea? That you're like, because you're trying to figure out, you know, we're keeping everything equal, make everything whatever. And you come up with a good gift idea and you're like, That one has some value to it, so it'd be a good one under the tree, but it's small, so it would fit in a stocking. Do you ever get conflicted about where that's going
to go? I feel like the stocking has a dollar limit, right? I mean, you can't.
Yeah, it should.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, right.
Unless and it's this Dyson.
Yeah, the Dyson wrap or whatever. I see.
Blow dryer.
Putting in a stocking.
I mean, I guess anything's better than coal, but if you do
that's
have coal,
true,
then you have to
true.
Use the old socks, the old holy socks.
Wait, have any of you ever actually, even as a joke, given a child coal?
No.
And I say this because I played soccer with a guy who said that one year his son had been so naughty.
Oh, that's aggressive.
That he put coal in his stocking. And then he thought it was hilarious.
Of
and
course
my heart
he did.
Broke for the kid.
Yes.
Because he's like, wow, this really but he said it worked.
No.
He said it worked.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know
he
what
became
the
a straight A student.
He might
be went to Harvard.
His kid might
he
be
needs
in therapy.
Therapy
today. Right, exactly. But in the short term, I guess it worked. Brett, thank you so much for joining us once again on the podcast. Always good to have you on.
Thank you for having me.
And Jason as well. Thank you for coming in here and sharing your expertise. Thank you all to all the people who make this podcast possible. I'm always so stumbly on this part. I'm always searching around
thank
for like
you,
is
Brian.
There a script?
Thank yeah. me, Brian.
Thanks to everybody like Sarah Smith here who always comes up with great off the record questions.
I don't
of course.
Know what that the first look as soon as I asked it, Jason just looked at me and the look in his eyes was like, what is she even asking right now? I'm glad we really turned that one around, guys. Thanks.
Thank you for stumping us sometimes. Also, thank you to our editor Dave Machuda and to our chief photographer manning the video switcher right there behind the scenes. That is Kale Zimney. With that, I'm Brian Polson. We'll be back next week.